Welcome to the Wellness Enclave with Dr. Sewell. The Wellness Enclave will explore emotional health and its impact on everyday life. In the Enclave, we will address how emotional health is connected to other parts of your life, such as physical health, relationships, spirituality, and even decision making. Our goal in the Wellness Enclave is to help you become a healthier, happier you through motivation, education, and innovation. And now, the Wellness Enclave with Dr. Sewell.
Hello, everyone. Good morning, and welcome to the Wellness Enclave with Dr. Sewell, where emotional health and wellness is our top priority. Today, we have a very special call-in guest. Her name is Ebony the Great Graves. We will be talking about domestic violence this morning. Again, I think this is a very important show, and you're listening to Dr. Sewell in the Enclave. Take me to a break, Mr. Smith.
You see, all I know is that my girlfriend used to date you. How would you feel if she held you down and raped you? Tried and tried, but she never could escape you. She was in love, and I'd ask you how. I mean, why? What kind of love fucking the mother would black your eye? What kind of love fucking the mother every night make you cry? What kind of love fucking the mother make you wish he would die? I mean, she bought you things and gave you diamond rings, but some things wasn't worth none of the pain that he brings. And you stayed. What made you fall for him? That had in the power to make you crawl for him. I thought you was a doctor, be on call for him. Smacked you down cause he said you was too tall for him. That wasn't love, baby girl, you was dreaming. I could have killed you when you said your seed was growing from his seed.
Love is blind, and it'll take over your mind. What you think is love?
All right. Welcome back to the Enclave with Dr. Sewell and our special call-in guest, Miss Ebony the Great Graves. How are you this morning, Miss Graves?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you for calling in. Today we're going to talk about domestic violence. I know you've been a victims advocate for a number of years, so I do appreciate you joining us this morning. My engineer, Mr. Smith, Mr. Deshaun, he may have some questions for you here or there, so he's not trying to trick you. I just make him learn something. Every show. I just try to make sure he learns something every show. Excuse me. So the first thing, this is what I want to start. I would like for you to define domestic violence, because I always like to make sure that we have a foundation for the listening audience.
Okay. So domestic violence or intimate partner violence is a pattern of behaviors used by one partner to maintain power control over the other partner. So it can include physical and sexual violence, threats, intimidation, emotional abuse, and economic deprivation.
Okay.
So it doesn't just have to have, you know, one or the other. Many of these violent acts can be occurring at the same time.
So let me ask you this, because I know you're in another state. Of course, I'm down here in Atlanta. Are the domestic violence laws the same, or do they differ from state to state?
So domestic violence laws differ from state to state. The differences range from the actual definition of domestic violence,
mm-hmm.
whether it's physical or whether it can be emotional or financial.
Mm-hmm.
It also determines from state to state whether, like, medical professionals are mandated reporters.
Okay. So let's kind of jump into some stats, or if you don't, excuse me, I'm sorry, if we don't have the stats, just in terms of what your experience has been. So in terms of women abusing men, how often do you hear that, and what are the stats on the reporting stats, if you have that?
Okay, so according to the Centers for Disease Control, 1 in 5 women and 1 in 7 men will experience severe physical violence by an intimate partner in their lifetime.
Okay.
So it's not just, you know, men are the abusers. Women are abusers as well.
how often do you see, in your profession, how often have you seen men actually come forward and report that?
For men to come forward, it takes a lot. So usually men coming forward as victims, it's severe or it's going to affect their career or profession. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, family member or other parties report on behalf of the men. So, you know, we have this male stigma like, oh, you know, I'm not a victim of domestic violence.
Right.
You know, or she didn't mean it, she was just upset, but violence is violence.
If it's a same-sex relationship or a same-partner relationship, and both are men, are the men more likely to come forward then, or have you ever had that experience or with that particular issue?
If it's same-sex, men are usually not willing to come forward simply because, you know, their community or their family may not even know that they are in the same-sex you know, relationship, or women may not want their family to know that they're in the same sex. So those stats are, you know, much lower.
Right, right. Probably lower and very, very limited and slighted a little bit, too, because people aren't really, they really aren't coming forward and reporting that. What are some high risk indicators, if any, what are some high risk indicators that you may be with a person who who's violent?
So controlling what he or she does, you know, who they talk to, isolation from the family, controlling, you know, the phone, you know, when let me see who texts you, or, you know, the mileage on your car says this and you just went to the store, so where were you? So it's just really using intimidation and just isolation are really high risk indicators.
So, and that's very interesting. So I always try to kind of give some real life scenarios on this show. So let me, I'm going to make myself the example. So if I am dating, and I'm going to use my engineer. So if I'm dating Deshaun, and Deshaun is saying to me, and I say, let's say it's the holidays, and he wants to spend the holidays, and I say, hey, can we see each other later? I have to spend today with my family because it's the holidays. And he says, well, I really wanted to spend time with you. And he gets upset and so on and so forth if I'm spending time with my family. And this even extends over into my friends. Like, I might want to go hang out with my friends. And he's like, no, I really want to see you. I just really want to be with you. As opposed to me thinking that, hey, this guy is really into me. And I've seen women do men like this as well. As opposed to me saying, hey, this guy's just really into me, you know, I just know that I'm gorgeous, you know, and I just got it going on. Would this be a high-risk indicator? Would it be more like, no, this guy might be a little controlling right here? What are your thoughts on that?
That's definitely a red flag.
Okay.
We have to remember that domestic violence and abuse stems from a desire to gain and maintain power control over that partner.
Okay. Does the perpetrator, does he or she, do they have a tendency to pick a certain type of person? You know what I mean? Like, you mentioned isolation. So my thought, an example of that would be, does a perpetrator maybe have a tendency to pick someone who maybe does not have a huge support system?
Absolutely. They tend to pick people who may not be able to speak up against, you know, their shenanigans, or, you know, they don't have someone to confide in.
Right.
So again, that plays into that isolation of, you know, getting their way with that person.
How would you look at someone who is, maybe who is short-tempered or doesn't have a lot of patience, so they get aggravated kind of easy? Is that something where a person, just like I mentioned, maybe just doesn't have patience, or is that something that may be a red flag and maybe I need to keep an eye on it if I'm in a relationship with that person?
I would definitely keep an eye on that. Just because people get angry doesn't mean, you know, that they are going to commit domestic violence or intimate partner violence. But it's what they get angry at is what you want to keep an eye on.
Okay.
You know, if every little thing sets them off, or you're walking around on eggshells, you definitely want to keep an eye on that.
Okay. All right. I want to ask you a quick question because we're about to go to break, so I want to make sure we don't get into anything, we don't go over So is there a certain time of year that domestic violence increases?
Usually during the holidays or a stressful time, you tend to have people who may strap themselves financially, therefore causing, you know, typical people to act out. So usually high stress periods of time.
So would you say something like the government shutdown, could that possibly have been a high stress time and maybe cause some individuals to become abusive, whether it's verbally, physically, or whatever? Would that be considered like a high stress situation?
Absolutely.
Okay. So we've been talking to Miss Ebony the Great Graves. We are talking about domestic violence. You are listening to The Enclave with Dr. Sewell, and we will be right back after this commercial break. All right. Welcome back to The Enclave with Dr. Sewell and our calling guest, Ms. Ebony the Great Graves. Our topic today is domestic violence. And again, I would like to thank you, Ms. Graves, for calling in, because I know it's a 3-hour time difference. And, you know, I know that might not be good for you, but I appreciate it. I appreciate it very much. So we've been talking about domestic violence. We've been talking about some of the high risk indicators as well as how it's defined. We've also discussed the differences in terms of men being the victim as opposed to women being the victim. So I kind of want to get into a few things now in terms of what a person should do, possible stigmas, those types of things like that. So what are some of the reasons that people give for not reporting abuse, whether it's verbal, whether it's financial, whatever it is? What are some of the reasons that people give for not reporting that?
A person may not know what a healthy relationship looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps, you know, from growing up in an environment where abuse was common, and they may not recognize that their relationship is unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
You have some people who just, you know, I love him, I love her.
Right.
You know, so...
I think that's very important, too, when you were talking about the person doesn't know what a healthy relationship looks like, because I've heard a lot of women say that unless somebody abuses them, you know, they don't feel like they're loved. So I've heard women
Correct.
Say that. So I think is very important. What about, I know when I was working over in Germany, and I was working with the military, a lot of times the women were, they didn't leave. What about support? Like, how much does that play into it? Like the support that the victim has in terms of whether or not they'll leave or report it.
Right. Typically, or especially in the military community, you have some men or women who are dependent on that partner.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have the money or resources to leave. You know, that victim is financially dependent on their abusive partner, and without money and access to resources or mm-hmm. even a place to go, it could be impossible for them to leave the relationship.
If a person does find themselves in trouble or being abused and they want to leave the relationship, before I get into the resources, this is what I really want you to lay out for everybody. Can they just get up and leave the relationship, or do they need to have a plan?
I would encourage someone to have a plan. Now, okay. If that person feels like their life is in danger, then by all means, get your behind up and leave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
However, leaving a relationship is the highest point of lethality when it comes to abusive relationship, meaning when a person tries to leave, the partner is 8 times out of 10 more likely to kill that individual when they're trying to leave. So mm-hmm. you need to have a plan.
So before you kind of get into the components of a plan, let me tell you why I brought that up, because this is a pet peeve I have. People know that someone is being abused, but they don't have the skill set. And instead of them reaching out to resources, because I've seen this happen in the church, and I'm not saying all churches, because I don't want anybody, you know, emailing talking about how are you going to talk about my pastor like that. So stop laughing at me, Mr. Smith. So, but in their effort to help, you know, for the people who don't say, well, you know, you got married, you have to stick by your spouse and blah, blah, blah. For the ones who will say leave, they don't understand a lot of times that a plan, most of the time that person needs to have a plan, because they don't understand, like you just said, the lethality portion of it. And so is really very important that people understand that, yes, if you can get out, if you can just leave, that's fantastic, but it's best to have a plan. So then my question to you before we get into the components of a plan is, when should you even in your mind start even developing a plan to leave if I'm the person that's being the victim?
If you are a victim, you should be planning in your mind to leave after the first act.
Okay. Okay. So what components should I be thinking about? What components should go into that plan?
You should be thinking about how you're going to leave, you know, mm-hmm. the safest time for you to leave. If it's while he or she is at work mm-hmm. or, you know, they're going on a business trip, mm-hmm. practice how to get out of the house safely, or their weapons that you need to lock away. You know, if you have a support network, mm-hmm. let them know what your plans are. You know, if you have children, mm-hmm. go over with your children, you know, hey, when you hear this, call 911. Even things such as keeping copies or making copies of important documents you need, social security mm-hmm. cards, bank statements.
Okay.
All of that things will play into that.
Okay. And if you are like making copies of those statements and things of that nature, where should you be keeping them? Because again, if you're dealing with a partner or a significant other that is abusive, a lot of times they're controlling and they're going through your things. So when you're making those copies, what's your recommendation or suggestion in terms of where you should keep those things, those papers?
If you have a trusted individual, keep copies at that person's home.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a P.O. box or a lock box, you know, at a bank.
Right.
You can even keep them at work. So just somewhere out of the home.
Okay. Now, if I am a family member, friend, loved one, what have you, or even neighbor, and I feel like someone in my circle is being abused, again, whether physically, sexually, emotionally, what do you recommend? Like, do I just go up and talk to the perpetrator and say, hey, you better keep your hands off of him or her? What do you recommend in order for me to assist that victim? What do you recommend to me?
I definitely would not recommend going up to the perpetrator because that could only make it the situation worse mm-hmm. for the victim.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to let that victim know that, one, their abuse is not their fault. You want to reassure them they are not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be judgmental. You know, I know we are quick to be like, well, if I was in that situation, I wouldn't.
Right.
You don't know what you would do.
Mm-hmm.
So don't judge that person.
Right.
And you can help them develop a safety plan. And just remember that you cannot rescue the victim if that person does not want to be rescued.
Absolutely. I think that's very important. So let me ask you this. We have about three, four minutes left. So what are some of the resources that are available? Now, I realize that you're in another state, but even if you give me resources in the state, I'm sure there are some 1-800 resources as well, or some national resources as well. So what are some resources that may be available or that are available to victims of domestic violence?
The National Domestic Violence Hotline, 1-800-799-SAFE.
Mm-hmm.
Is available, like I said, nationally, and they have trained victim advocates that can help you get restraining orders,
mm-hmm.
Shelters in your particular community. They have links to confidential counseling and legal resources for those victims.
Okay. And what is, tell me how many minutes we have, Mr. Smith. Tell me what we got. Okay. So let me go back to a quick question, and then I want you to tell us where you know what you're doing and where we can reach you. So I have a quick question for you so people can kind of understand this. If you are a victim that lives within the home of your perpetrator, you live in the home, so basically you are, you're being abused, and there are children who live in that home as well, is there a possibility that there can be repercussions legally because there are children in the home while you're being abused, particularly physically? Are there
Absolutely.
Repercussions for the parents or the adults that are in that situation? Mm-hmm.
Yes, failure to protect.
Okay.
So if you're being abused and the children are seeing that, that's emotional abuse. So, you know, we all want to be careful and very protective of not only ourselves, but of our children
right.
in those instances.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Ms. DeGrate Graves. I wanted to ask you, outside of victim advocacy, are you doing anything else? Because, again, I always tell people I'm all about promoting whatever businesses they have, as long as they're legal and they're healthy and they're all good. can't just come in here promoting anything. So do you have, is there anything that you're doing on the side outside of victim advocacy that you would like to tell people about and tell them how to contact you?
Sure. Outside of victim advocacy, you know, to keep me kind of sane and
mm-hmm.
on my right path, I do event planning.
Okay.
So you can check me out at the website, yourevent.com.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. We have been listening to Ms. Ebony DeGrate Graves, as usual. I hope you guys learned something in the Enclave, and I hope you have a fantastic day and a happy and healthy week. I will talk to you next week.
This has been the Wellness Enclave with Dr. Sewell. Join us each Wednesday morning at 7 a.m. on WWE The Real 1100 AM. We look forward to growing with you.